Greetings, this is James Gillen. I'm your host. We've got another great show. We've got Michael Sala with us, who's the director of Exopolitics in Hawaii. And being over in the islands, I thought it was appropriate to get in touch with him. And he's got several books out. His latest book is Kennedy's Last Stand. And I would love to cover that because it ties into everything that's happening right now on the planet and gives us a deeper understanding. So we can be in knowledge of what's happening. Rather than just give one side of the coin and the feel-good message, you know, we need to look at both sides of the coin, and that's what enlightenment means, to be in knowledge of all of it, you know. So we're probably going to hear some interesting things, and it's time to just kind of set your ego on the side and listen with an open mind, and then make your own decisions after the show. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Michael to the show. Michael, are you with us?
I am, James. Great to be here on the show, and aloha to you.
Yeah, it's great to be here on the islands, you know, getting out of that freezing weather. I'd be shoveling snow if I wasn't here.
Yeah, well, we've got beautiful blue sky, a wonderful day here in Pahoa, the big island.
Yeah, I had such a greeting when I got here. I saw a beautiful rainbow, and on the way to the place where I was staying, the whales were out just totally breaching, and some mothers had just given birth, and they're holding their little calves up, you know, and keeping them up out of the water. It was amazing watching the interaction there. And then second day, the same thing happened. It was amazing. And then the third day, I went out on a boat to go out and hang out with the whales. So it's been just an amazing experience here. You're blessed to be on these islands.
Yeah, it is a wonderful place to be, and to do this kind of work on exopolitics is great.
You know, I'd love to talk to you about your new book, you know, Kennedy's Last Stand. And I've always loved Kennedy, and you know, he was one of the last people to really stand up against, I call them the powers at work, because they are fading fast. But I'd love to get your take on that, and also, you know, down the road, we'll see how that ties into, you know, any of the latest information coming out about the Nazi ET connection, and how on some of the highest levels that's actually affecting us, you know, in a political way.
Well, yeah, I started doing this Kennedy research, and I was really surprised when I found out that Kennedy was very closely tied in with James Forrestal, who was this visionary who truly did want to share the information about extraterrestrial life with the rest of the country and the world, and that Kennedy actually traveled with James Forrestal, who at the time was Secretary of the Navy, to post-war Germany, and Forrestal introduced him to all this high-level information and policymaking, and it was the Potsdam meeting, and Kennedy was there as Forrestal's guest, and Kennedy got to see the basically the most powerful people on the planet, both political and military, all making these key decisions about how to kind of divide up the spoils of war of Nazi Germany. And of course, that's when Project Paperclip was all being decided. Truman made the decision to authorize Project Paperclip at the very time that Kennedy was there in Germany. So Kennedy got to see all this high-level stuff. And he also got to travel and see some of the Nazi technologies. And he actually wrote about it in his book, Prelude to Leadership. And that, to me, was the most surprising thing in my research on the Kennedy issue, was to just see his relationship with James Forrestal, who truly turned out to be a visionary, who challenged the powers that were, as you describe them, and paid the ultimate price in 1949. That was Forrestal, who was, I believe, assassinated. And, of course, Kennedy followed that same vision later on when he became president.
It was definitely he wanted to bring out, you know, disclosure back in the day. I just think it would be so amazing if that disclosure was allowed to happen, and a lot of that technology went into the hands of the people, you know, versus the hands of the elite and black projects and things like that. We wouldn't be having cars, you know, belching gas. We'd be having fuelless energy vehicles without tires, probably traveling several thousand miles an hour, you know.
Exactly. I really think it's important to appreciate that Kennedy, I believe, when he became president, was was there because he was going to implement this new vision, a completely different world, and everything that he did was building up to that, especially the last few months of his life when he actually got the go-ahead from the Soviet Union for joint space missions and missions to the moon. That, you know, people often think of Kennedy as was the one who started off the space race with the Soviet Union, but in fact, Kennedy did the opposite. He actually he reached agreement with the Soviet Union. The premier at the time was Nikita Khrushchev. So Kennedy and Khrushchev, even though they began and had a rocky start, by the just before he was killed, Kennedy and Khrushchev actually reached agreement. So they were going to implement this new era, this new age of high-level cooperation between the Soviet Union and the US. They would have joint missions to the moon, and most importantly, that they would share information with one another about UFOs, extraterrestrial life, and so forth. And I think that that would have actually set about a brand new world where the kind of vision that you were talking about, where all of these new energy technologies would have been shared, would have been openly developed, and we would have had a very different world. And I think that was really what Kennedy was here to do. And the assassination really put an end to all that.
Well, I know in Germany, and I know certain people, which I don't want to really mention, you know them as well, have technology here right now on the planet to where we wouldn't have a Fukushima, or we wouldn't have any of these things. They have devices that could plug right into the dynamos and run them, you know, without the radiation or the nuclear reactors. And that's been around for quite a while, and I think that is going to be implemented very soon here. It seems to be in the works, but there's so many things going on right now behind the scenes that we don't know about. But if in the day of Kennedy, if they would have gone forward and let this information out, you know, we wouldn't be having these Gulf oil spills or these Fukushimas or all core exits, and probably wouldn't be having all the chemtrails and GMOs and everything else that's affecting us right now.
Well, exactly. You know, that Kennedy truly did want to basically make government much more transparent. I mean, he was one of the kind of old-time Democrats that really believed in government transparency. And I mean, this is what made Kennedy different, was that he and Forrestal both came from a successful Irish entrepreneurial class in the kind of New England area, which at the time was predominantly white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who basically wanted to implement an elite system where it was all the rich boys club. It was all done in secrecy, and it was all done in terms of who you know. Whereas Kennedy, along with Forrestal, were part of this kind of this new breed of successful Americans, Irish Americans, who basically wanted to implement a system where it was all done on the basis of merit. You know, people who were really the best persons for the job were the ones that would be given a lot of responsibility and authority. And this was what Kennedy wanted to do when he became president. And of course, he ran headfirst into the opposition of the kind of the establishment, who wanted to do things in terms of the old boys club, the elite system, where it was all done in secrecy, who you knew and connections. That was the way it was going to be done. And of course, there was a competing these two competing visions of how this whole extraterrestrial issue was going to be managed and conducted in the future. And Kennedy was really was the last stand. It was like this was the last attempt to ensure that the secrecy system concerning extraterrestrials would actually be run in a way that was transparent, as opposed to the secret system that was in place at the time. And unfortunately, as we know the history, it was the establishment that won.
Yeah, it's too bad we can't go back in a time machine, you know, and give a couple little shoves here and there, you know, just to restart this whole thing. But I guess everything has a reason, everything has a purpose, and I hope we learn and educate ourselves concerning what really went down. You did an excellent interview on Coast to Coast a while back, where you were kind of laying out the story of the kind of the Nazi ET connection. I'd love to go into that if you want to shed any more light on that.
Sure. Well, you know, it's a connection that goes back, of course, into the Second World War era, and what the Nazis have done. And, you know, and it's a little hard to kind of pinpoint exactly what happened, how the Nazis were able to get their hands on this ET technology, because the Nazis were doing different things. I mean, they had an elite team called the SS Annamerby that actually traveled the world, went to all these places, Peru, Tibet, to find whatever information they could get on extraterrestrial life and esoteric information. The Nazis also got their hands on some extraterrestrial technologies. We know that there's actual documentation showing Mussolini turned over to the Nazis some of the advanced technologies, UFOs that they found, that the Italian Air Force found. And then you had all of the information from the kind of communications that these mystics that the Nazis recruited to were communicating with extraterrestrial civilizations through channeling, and that brought about more information. So basically, all these different sources, the Nazis were able to develop technologies where, at the end of the war, I mean, they had some really sophisticated things. And of course, when the US Air Force was trying to work out what was behind the UFO phenomenon, they were basically going to what they knew of what the Nazis had developed and saying, well, this is the closest we know of any kind of terrestrial technology which approximates the behaviors of these UFOs.
Now they, now I've heard different stories about it. I've heard stories that that they actually got some pretty highly developed people. I guess there was even a Palladian ship that they had access to that crashed, that ran into some kind of problems, and as well as some of the gray technology or things like that. How far do you think this goes back? I've heard stories that go back, to the early 30s, but it may go back even earlier than that.
Well, it goes back to even to the Theosophical Society. I think one of the key people was this English writer, Edward Bulwer Lytton, who talked about the coming race of the Vril, and he talked about the Vril Force. And of course, this was something that the esoteric community in Great Britain and Germany and Europe at the time were very fascinated by the whole idea of this superior man, of someone who reached a higher stage of development, a higher stage of consciousness, and who could basically, through the power of consciousness, they were able to do many more things. And of course, we know that there's actual fact. This is based in fact when it comes to these more highly developed technologies. That it actually is a merging of the mind and the technology to get them to the work. And so this was something that the Nazis were very involved in. Hitler knew about this because he was involved in these esoteric studies, the Thule Society, the Vril Society. He was kind of involved in all of that. And the people who gave Hitler the initial backing were elites associated with the Thule Society. So they were very familiar with a lot of these ideas, and so I think that the Nazis really gave a lot of emphasis and put a lot of resources into developing these ideas. And of course, by the time Nazi Germany came into full development, Hitler had the full resources of an advanced industrial state behind him, and so the Nazi SS. These were guys that were actually combining all of the most highly developed technologies that the Nazis were developing at the time with meditation, mind control, all of these things. I mean, they had Tibetan Buddhists over there teaching them how to meditate, how to kind of access latent abilities within the human mind. And so this was something that the Nazi SS actually thought that this was the key for being able to become these supermen. And of course, then later on, it kind of got, you had the esoteric development of it, and then you had the exoteric development of it, which in the exoteric, you had this kind of crude racial philosophy that the Nazis implemented. Of course, it was kind of like, racial purity and all of that. But in the esoteric school, it was all about developing the mind. It was all about being able to achieve this state of nirvana so that the mind could be cleared, and that for the Nazis was the key for how to access these technologies. And so that's what they were doing, and I think that's the kind of unwritten story about the war, about the Second World War, is how successful were the Nazis in being able to develop these kinds of higher abilities to be able to use these technologies that they got their hands on.
Yeah, I heard two different stories. I heard one that you know, it wasn't just the Jews that were being exterminated. It was also anybody that was awake or aware, the intellects that were aware of what was going on and were speaking up against the system and stopping the extermination. You know, the highly educated were being done away with as well at the same time. And you know, it's, as you're saying, you know, that esoteric side and then the exoteric side, which really went awry, you know, with as a lot of these guys do, they start off good. You know, I guess in the beginning, you know, Hitler was an artist. He had all these abilities. He was going on a spiritual path. He was a vegetarian. You know, you read all these stories about him, and then, you know, he wanted to create a utopia, and then the twisted side of it came up where they said, well, the way you do create a utopia is you get rid of anything that doesn't measure up to your expectations or your ideals.
Well, that's right. You know, he really was someone who believed in this idea of the Superman, of the man who could basically do phenomenal things, you know, intellectually and spiritually, mystically, and he kind of encouraged that in Nazi Germany through the various programs that the SS followed. But of course, it had the dark side as well, which was the racial extermination, which was really a really crude way of trying to bring about a kind of more advanced society, of kind of eliminating those that were less fortunate, or maybe those that were different racial or different religious and racial orientation, and eliminate them from your society. That somehow this could bring about a society based on Superman was a really crude twist on the whole idea. But certainly this was something that the Nazis believed in, and I think that they did succeed to a certain extent. Peter Lavender, I think, has done the most work in tracing out how successful the Nazis were in developing these kind of mystical abilities or higher abilities. Mm-hmm. And of course, when we look at the whole question of the extraterrestrial phenomenon, this kind of runs consistently with that.
Yeah, speaking on that subject, it seems like, you know, it's a mixed bag, you know, as above, so below. And there are a lot of people that are saying all ETs are good. They're all loving. They're all, you know, they want our highest and best good and things like that. And then there's other people that are saying they're all bad. They're demons, you know, and this and that, you know. And then there's other people saying all we're seeing is Nazi technology or back engineered things, you know. And I've always, in my research, I you know, it's all the above, you know, is going on. It's not just one thing.
Yeah, exactly. It is all of the above, and that's a very important thing to keep in mind. Otherwise, we're going to miss a lot of important opportunities and be susceptible to a lot of the disinformation programs that are happening now. And, you know, I think especially at this time, I think we are having a lot of very positive extraterrestrials and ascended beings helping us, helping our evolution as a society, as a planetary culture, and we are being given the opportunity to evolve in a way where the planet isn't going to self-destruct because of these advanced technologies that have been secretly developed. Because of the agreements between some elite government entities and various ET factions that really don't have our best interest at heart. But I think there's a good reason to be optimistic, and I think we can really make some incredible leaps in the next few years.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think we're going through the great uncovering, you know, like... I think it was Armageddon or whatever, just means the great uncovering. But right now we're in that phase where all of this information is coming out. We're seeing who is blocking The evolution of Earth and who is not working in the highest and best good of humanity and the Earth, and that's all being made very clear to people, and people are becoming aware of even unseen negative influences and other dimensional beings that are interfering with the Earth's evolution. So we're in that huge disclosure process of the negative, if you want to call it negative, or of the things that are not in the highest and best good of humanity and the Earth. And I think the next phase, which we're coming into really soon, is the action part of it, where people are going to rise up and just say, you know, we're done. We're done with the manufactured lock. We're done with the being enslaved through dependency. We're done with the disinformation and the dishonesty and the, you know, and it seems like everywhere people are just awakening up and rising up and getting ready to just say, you know, we just don't want to play this game anymore.
I think that is happening. There is a kind of rising in consciousness, and exactly what is causing that. I mean, we might think it's just the kind of the internet, or it might be some kind of high dimensional rays coming through black holes or whatever it is. But somehow this does seem to be a kind of a rising in consciousness, and that's good. That basically, I think, augurs well for us in the future. And I do think that there's something in this kind of converging timelines. You know, I like to think that what could have happened with Kennedy is not something that is gone forever, that there's a kind of timeline where, you know, Kennedy wasn't assassinated, and where he actually did disclose the truth, that the Soviet Union and the US actually became friends and allies, and that resulted in a lot of these technologies basically being released, and that particular timeline and the timeline that we went on, that they do converge in the future. And I think we're reaching that point where there's this kind of converging of these positive timelines with our current reality, because I think we've made the right choices as a culture. We haven't imploded, which means that those negative timelines where we could have imploded, that they aren't going to be realized, so that we're going to be converging with the positive timelines. And that, I think, is very important, because that means that we are going to experience in the near future a kind of reality where these positive possibilities are represented by what Kennedy did, and people like Forrestal and Eisenhower, to a certain extent. What they want is now going to bear fruit, and I think this is something I look forward to in the next few years.
I always feel that they went up and just got reinforcements, you know, and they're still working and implementing their plans on another level, and a much more powerful level, and all those plans are going to come forward, you know, and bringing all this information out and educating people, and it's just being done on another level. I feel the same as you. It's not over with. It's not gone. It's still there. It just went to the next level up, and now they're all working together on that level, and they're pushing that consciousness and energy in, you know, down through the vibrational continuum into the Earth, and everybody's starting to wake up right now and go, wow, what has been going on?
Yeah, there's definitely an awakening. Now people are just much more aware of the way in which governments lie and false flag operations are conducted. And so people are very suspicious now. They haven't quite yet reached the point, you know, the tipping point where they accept extraterrestrial life as real. But we know the scientific community is really talking about it much more now. The whole exoplanet phenomenon is something that has a lot of scientists openly talking for the first time about, well, what happens when we discover extraterrestrial life? I mean, who's going to make policy here? And, you know, what should be the policy? And all of those sorts of questions that, you know, 10 years ago they would have said, oh, well, that's all speculation. Well, now their scientists are talking about it. Even the world's leading thinkers like Stephen Hawking are now talking about extraterrestrial motivations. Are they good guys or bad guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, because we have projected our consciousness on them, you know, anthropomorphizing this whole situation. And we can't even relate to, especially these higher dimensional beings, you know, that where they've transcended, you know, war and disease and lack, and, you know, they lack for nothing. And, you know, they live in that unified field of unity consciousness. They're not even operating under our programs, but we extend those programs onto them, and we're waiting for this big Star Wars thing to happen where they're going to fly, ship to ship and blast each other with lasers and all these other things, and through the media, all the programming coming through the Hollywood and things of that nature. And I was showing something. They said that we don't operate that way, and the much higher dimensional beings. And I've actually seen them just move beings and their ships, into another time, or they just send them back to where they came, or things like that. It's very seldom do they engage in the any kind of hand to hand or laser to laser combat, that kind of thing. I'm sure that's happening on some level, and I'm sure our own government has been firing on the ships and taking down some of the lesser evolved ships, I'd say. But overall, these higher dimensional beings, they seem to have full use of like creational energies. It's amazing what they can do, and they can just appear and disappear and jump, jump into another time, another dimension. It just doesn't work the way that most people are projecting, their reality onto the reality of these much more advanced beings.
Yeah, I think there's more of an understanding now of exactly what what the ascension phenomenon is, that these high dimensional energies are coming into our world. Unity consciousness is something that is becoming more prevalent now. More people are kind of feeling that sense of unity, and I think that there's something to be said for the idea of some kind of a universal ascension process that is happening now, and that the Earth is somehow a critical part of that. These ascended beings are here. They're helping us to basically become a society which is transformed by this ascension wave. And that means going more into this kind of unity consciousness, being able to express that, not do things in the old way of, going to war and getting the lightsaber out and battling the dark side, but kind of looking at the dark side and where you can feel that unity consciousness, and it truly is something that transforms. And that I think is the key. I remember many years ago reading people like Martin Luther King and talking about how the power of transformation was something phenomenal, and how you, for example, the best way to defeat the enemy is to make them your friend. And mm-hmm. And I think this is what ascension is all about. It's getting out of that old mindset of like, well, he's my enemy, and I need to think of ways of humiliating him or destroying him. And where your mind changes, your consciousness slips, where all of a sudden your enemy is now your friend, because you can feel that, you can see that, and that does transform them. And as you were saying, these high dimensional beings, that's the way they operate. They don't go through the whole kind of lightsaber, mm-hmm. battle cruiser attacks, and even though they have those technologies, but it's all about just feeling and thinking differently. And I think that's something that we as a planetary culture are now being given the opportunity to do that. And the more of us that practice that in our lives, I mean, it's kind of easy to do that in a place like Hawaii, where everything is really beautiful, and people are so much more relaxed, and so much more in tune with nature. But certainly you can do that anywhere. There are many beautiful places in the United States and around the world where you can be in tune with nature, and it's all about being one with your environment, and the more you do that, the more capable you are of kind of expressing this ascension energy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree 100%. There's I was telling people that the real battle, if you want to call it a battle, is happening in consciousness, and it's everything goes from consciousness to light to energy to mass, in the creational process, and so. So the real work is being done on other levels that we're not even aware of, and through the grid system, the consciousness and energy grid system of Earth, and the old grid is collapsing. And you read all of the ancient prophecies, it just doesn't turn out well for the tyrants. I don't know one prophecy that says is that things go their way in the end. So it's to me, resistance is futile. The more these guys try to suppress and manipulate and control, the more, you know, this there's going to be a reaction to that, or, you know, basic action, reaction, or karma is going to be accelerated as well. And it seems to be happening, not just one source, but we are just getting blasted by, you know, galactic plane. The energy's coming in there. We're having gamma ray bursts coming from all around us. We're getting bombarded with cosmic energies, you know, which are creating changes, even DNA changes, and carbon's changing. Everything is undergoing an incredible change right now, and I just don't see any way of stopping this shift, because the energies that are involved in this shift are beyond any of our imagination and far beyond anything the tyrants can do to maintain their kingdoms.
Yes, exactly, because this is an energy that is basically coming through throughout the universe. You know, whether it's coming through black holes or gamma ray emissions from the central core or coming from the sun, you know, it's probably coming from all of those things. And it also comes from ourselves too, because we have within us, you know, as above, so below. And so we have within us, in our own kind of psychic core, we have something that is connected to all that is. And so this transformative energy is also emanating from all of us. So if, and I think that there's a truth to that, that this ascension energy, this transformative energy, is coming through everything that is, and it can't be blocked. So I know that they have their chemtrails out there hoping that they can block the energy of the sun, and, you know, thinking that maybe this will be the way to kind of slow down these ascension energies. But I don't think that's going to work for them, because really it comes through everything, space and time. Everything is interconnected, and it's all, you know, the unity consciousness is what ties us all together. And, you know, and for the bad guys, you know, I think at the end of the day, when we're in this kind of more elevated state of consciousness, we're not going to kind of look at them the way we look at them now, which is, you know, the bad guys. We're going to look at them more in the terms of, you know, you're looking at the of an actor playing a role of a bad guy on stage, and, you know, you have actors playing the role of the good guys. You don't, at the end of the play, you don't sort of like clap loudly for the guys playing the good roles and, you know, sneer at the guys playing the bad roles. You clap for all of them, because they all played a great, they put together a great show. They really did, they performed their roles admirably. And I think that's the way we'll look at it all, that the guys playing the bad, negative roles, that, you know, that these were roles that their soul, that their higher consciousness took on for them. You know, they took on these personalities playing this role, this nasty role. But at the end, when we're in that higher realm of consciousness, we're going to see, okay, this was just a personality that the soul chose to wear to perform this role, so that everyone could basically play their part in this great ascension drama that is happening now on our planet.
Yeah, I heard a story once where these two guys met after they had a great war, you know, and they both killed each other, and they went on the other side, and they're talking about all the times that they met up in the past, you know, and they're going, hey, remember when you hacked my head off in that lifetime again? Remember when you ran that spear through me in the other lifetime? And they're sitting there sharing all these stories on the other side. You know, that was a good one. You know, that was a good one. And then they come back and reincarnate and do it again. But it's kind of, but at what point I go, okay, you know, there's universal law, you know, and there's a lot to be said about being kind and loving to each other. You know, as far as a higher evolution, you might say. And I always wonder, at what point are we going to get it, you know, and start operating within universal law and being kind to each other and the planet, and evolving, you know, this physical world and this experience to its highest potential.
Right. I don't think, you know, following the kind of ascension way, that it's all about being kind and loving to each other. It's all about just recognizing this higher truth of a unity between us. And, you know, it's just like a parent and a child. You know, a parent has to discipline a child having a tantrum. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that the parent, you know, suddenly becomes, you know, very kind of enabling for a child going through a tantrum. You know, you go through some, you know, like tough love or something like that. And I think that in a way, that's how we have to deal with the bad guys. It's like, you know, they're playing this role, this tough role, or this negative role, and we have to be, you know, we operate from that dimension of unity, that higher consciousness of unity. But we have to play a role of kind of like opposing them and being strong and being centered in the higher truth and who we are. And so sometimes that means we have to be pretty tough with these guys because they're not, you know, they're not pushovers.
No.
But, you know, it's like it's just knowing the role that we have to play in being anchored in truth and unity and helping this transformation move forward.
Yeah, I was told recently, they said, you know, it's time to practice love and kindness, you know, as your daily practice, but at the same time, set boundaries for those who are not.
Yes, thanks, James. It is important that to set boundaries. That's exactly the way we need to move forward as we deal with the people that have been running the secrecy system, because I think there is going to be an exposure. There is going to be a collapse of the secrecy system, and people that have been running it for decades, we need to be able to deal with them and in a way where we can make the right choices in terms of, well, how do we respond to them? You know, do we try to punish them? Or do we just remove them from power silently? Do we just kind of take over the power ourselves, you know, not having the experience that they have? Finding the right solution is going to be important.
Yeah, definitely. It just seems like, you know, we've got to end this manufactured lack and this enslavement through dependency and all these other things. You know, I call it the Archon network that's in place that keeps everybody external, you know, in competition, external, everything outside of yourself, you know, even seeking, you know, spirit, creator, source, whatever you want to call it outside of yourself. All these old programs that are so instilled need to come down and to, you know, where people get back into unity consciousness and they start working in the highest and best good of each other and humanity, the earth, and start cooperating. And that's what I see happening. That's the energy coming in. And the more that comes in, the more people align themselves with that energy, the more these other energies won't have, you know, a place to function.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really glad that there are so many people out there that are doing this work, and I'm so glad that you're doing it through the Ascetti Ranch and all the workshops you're doing.
Yeah, it's getting really interesting there. I think we're okay, but boy, we sure had our challenges by the powers that be, and you know, had to go to court 10 times just to maintain the ranch and to continue in what we're doing. And it's amazing how they use the system, you know, the justice system, which has become the just us system. You know, they're using all the network, you know, to really hold down and suppress people and keep people in darkness. But you know what's great is all that is coming to the light now, and there's a lot of people, you know, standing up and just calling it like it is and saying this is what's going on, and other people are hearing it. And I think it's just a matter of time before the masses, you know, we hit that critical mass that people just enough people wake up and just say, okay, we're not doing this anymore.
Well, that's what I'm hoping is like this book I wrote, The Kennedy's Last Stand. My hope was that the 50th anniversary that was just celebrated, that as people start to kind of reflect about Kennedy and what he meant, that people see the history of what he tried to do and how close he got to succeeding in setting up a system that was going to be based on cooperation. And maybe now, in our current world, given the kind of growing antagonism with the Russian Federation and conflict, that maybe now we can move forward and kind of realize Kennedy's vision. And I think ET disclosure is going to really help, because people will then see how petty our kind of little differences are with one another. That as we contemplate the existence of extraterrestrial civilizations, then we do need to unify as a planet, as a culture, and people like Kennedy will be seen in a different light as visionaries.
I've always felt, I know one of the things they told me in my studies, eventually I ended up with the conclusion that, you know, we all came from the same place and we all returned to the same place. And, you know, diversity is great. You know, it'd be a very boring planet down here without the diversity. But we have to transcend all cultural and religious boundaries and get into unity consciousness to really get into the next level, you know, to get out of this plane of duality and move on. But at the same time, you know, we have to honor the diversity, you know, that as being great. You know, we can't say one religion supersedes another or one culture is better than another. They're just all different flavors, you know, coming from the same source, you know, the same, like the same ice cream makers behind all of it.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, there's a lot of different areas I wanted to go into. One other area I wanted to go into was not just the shifts that's going on, but maybe I was wondering what you perceive as far as, you know, there's a lot of people who are talking about a revolution, you know, that we're right on the edge of an Arab Spring happening in, you know, the U.S. and things of that nature. And I'm hoping it's a peaceful evolution and a peaceful revolution, and that we can do this, you know, within unity consciousness and find ways of transitioning, you know, into this higher realm or higher consciousness and energy without all the violence and all the other things.
Well, you know, it's very interesting you say that, James. You know, I can see how that we are kind of on the verge of a revolution, but is it going to be a kind of steered revolution? You know, I think this is one of the things I wait to see, because I think in many ways things can change really very quickly once certain information is released. And one thing that the powers that were are very adept at doing is controlling the release of information. And, you know, we see this with Edward Snowden in terms of the NSA documents. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Snowden is a genuine whistleblower. But I think that the controllers are very good at kind of releasing information in a way that promotes their agenda, even though on the surface it seems to kind of expose a lot of operations and kind of like be a setback for the controllers. And so I think with the revolution that is coming, you know, we need to be very careful that maybe the first wave of that is something that's going to be very highly controlled. You know, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's going to be done through someone like Edward Snowden releasing a certain amount of information that kind of like seems to lead to a collapse of the system, but in a way preserves it in a more cleverly disguised way. That we need to go beyond that. That there will need to be something which is more genuine. Because I certainly don't expect them to release the truth about the extraterrestrial question at all. Well, I mean, I think that they'll release some of it, you know, that extraterrestrials are here, but it'll be kind of like probably twisting it in a way which makes them out to be kind of malevolent and something to be distrusted and opposed.
Definitely. You know, they're going to twist it so they can keep the war industry going and keep, you know, a lot of funds going in that direction, you know, to further their agenda, you know, and keep the police state going and all these other things. You know, they're just running out of threats. You know, they're running out of terrorists, and they're running out of countries, you know, and the other countries are all starting to unite together and just saying, hey, we know the game here and we're not playing it anymore. So it does seem to be moving in that direction, where a lot of the other countries are figuring it out. They're saying that we don't want to perpetuate, you know, this tyranny program anymore, and the stealing of resources of other countries, and you know, the war industry and the war and disease profiteers and the banksters. All this stuff is being exposed. And you know, take Iceland. I thought it was amazing. You know, nobody is talking about Iceland. It's on the internet, you know, here and there, but you know, Iceland just threw them out and canceled the debt and started over. And, you know, and now they're just totally flourishing. But you know, we're just not hearing about the solutions, you know, the people that are actually banding together and solving the problem.
Right, yeah. Iceland is a very interesting case. I know other countries have really been struggling to deal with, you know, this enormous debt that they've had to kind of impose on the taxpayers, because governments tend to bail out the big banks, and the taxpayers left holding the bag, and then the country suffers all of these chronic budgetary deficit problems. But Iceland is a good model for how to do that. I know Argentina did it in the 90s. They did something similar when they refused to go along with the whole IMF restructuring of their loans, of their bad loans. So, yeah, there's definitely solutions out there.
Yeah, so we just need to get educated to, you know, what is the process of returning this place back to peace and harmony and abundance, you know, because there's plenty. I know in the movie Thrive, you know, I was looking at the numbers and they were saying that if you gave everybody an acre of land, you know, that the entire population would fit into a state the size of Texas. You know, so we don't have this massive overpopulation program that they're talking about, you know, that they have to start, you know, doing a little a die-off program where the genocide programs that are well in place right now, you know, we don't have to go that way. Whoever is behind that program is definitely a little psycho. But you know, I was talking about that, you know, to some person, a person of mine, and she was going, "Well, you're just in fear, you know, you're peddling fear porn, and you're doing this and that, and all this other stuff." And I said, "Well, I'm not in fear. I'm looking at things objectively, and I'm observing things, and I'm seeing things. I'm not doing it in fear. I'm just observing the obvious." And, you know, I told her, I said, "Well, I want you to really think about, you know, the depleted uranium spread all over the Middle East, you know, and the implications of that, the chemtrails, the GMO foods, you know, the Gulf oil spill, the core exit, you know, I can go on and on, you know, Fukushima. You know, aspartame, the water with 650 to 850 carcinogens in it, in the tap water. You know, I said it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that as you move up this hierarchical ladder and in the decision-making process, that whoever's at the top of this ladder does not really like humanity. It doesn't have our highest and best good, you know, in at heart. And so we have to take a look at that. If we are going to solve this problem and take a look at the condition of our environment and this civilization and our health and well-being and everything, and try to, like Einstein said, you know, you can't use the same thought to create a different system or whatever, you know, you know, it's the same program. I know I didn't quote that right. You probably have the right quote for that one, but you know, it's like we have to step back and take a good hard look at what's going on with brutal honesty and seeing if we're a willing participant in any of this and just step out of it. You know, don't participate in this program anymore, and you might have to start speaking up about some of the things happening in your neighborhood.
Well, the truth is coming out. This is something that's very encouraging, and a good example of that is what happened just over a week ago with the FARS news agency, where they put out a story about the United States being run by Nazi ETs. You know, even though there was a kind of certain amount of disinformation there, still you had the mainstream media openly discussing whether or not the United States is controlled by these kinds of negative extraterrestrials that have been part of these secret agreements. And that's kind of like a really phenomenal development, like the truth is coming out, even though at first people laugh at it and dismiss it as like, oh, well, that's just kind of Iranian nonsense that they've picked up from a disinformation site in Russia. But still, we know from credible people that, in fact, the United States has reached agreements with certain extraterrestrial groups, and these agreements have been implemented, and they have not resulted in the best things for the US. And to many extents, you can say that the US is controlled by the ETs involved in these agreements. So this is now something that the international media is discussing. So the truth is coming out, even though at first it's dismissed as a joke and disinformation. I think it's still getting out there.
I know Jerome Corsi and a lot of the other ones actually laid out quite a case for, you know, Project Paperclip and how that moved into NASA and the CIA and other agencies, and how, you know, they put these guys in powerful positions. And so it does tie in with the evidence and recorded history, you know, a lot of what they're talking about.
Well, that's right. Yes, the Nazi kind of evolution is important because, in many ways, they did kind of like import the Nazi mindset along with the Nazi scientists and the secrecy system set up to deal with the ETs. A lot of that was also kind of incorporated because I think the Nazis were the first ones to develop these highly classified compartmentalized programs. The Nazis, and so they brought along with their expertise, this knowledge of how the Nazis ran their black programs.
And it's obvious. I know I have a lot of friends that are within the Lakota Nation, and I know some of the chiefs there, and well, that's interesting. I just lost my screen. Are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay, that's interesting. Everything went black, but you're still on. It was quite interesting. They told me, you know, they just had a huge lawsuit against the government and the Catholic Church for smuggling these Nazis and, you know, out onto the reservations where they continued in a lot of their programs. And you know, it was pretty hideous, you know, what they did to a lot of the Native Americans. You know, that wasn't a pretty picture at all. But, you know, I found that interesting when, you know, when they actually won their suit and they openly proved, you know, that there was an agreement, you know, with the our own government and the Catholic Church to smuggle a bunch of these Nazis out and put them out on the reservations, and where they continued, you know, with a lot of those practices.
Yeah, the Vatican, the role of the Vatican in basically the secrecy system that has been set up is pretty important. The Vatican has been involved since the Second World War, and relocating Nazis was part of something that the Vatican was doing. There's a great book called Rat Lines by, I can't remember the full name, Aaron Zuloftis. I think they were the joint authors, something like that. But essentially that the Vatican was playing a role in relocating a lot of Nazis, and that part of this was working with the U.S., in the setting up of a system to deal with these advanced technologies that ETs were familiar with, or that the ETs had brought with them or exchanged in various agreements, that the Vatican was a part of that from the very beginning and continues to be a part of that.
You know, I was getting some information that from the higher dimensional beings and everything. And I know that, you know, because of universal law and what they used to call the prime directive, they couldn't intervene, and but it got to a point where the regenerate ones have intervened so much and broken universal law that now they are having to come in and start, you know, kind of leveling the playing field, so to speak. And some of the information we've been getting, which is highly controversial, and people been getting very angry about it, is about the ancient Anunnaki, the ones that left, that continued, you know, and operating under universal law, and they do have a council of 12 with 6 men and 6 women on it, and now they've returned, and they're interacting with, they're doing a major recall on the fallen ones, the fallen Anunnaki, and so it looks like we have, not all the Anunnaki are bad, you know, they were the bearded gods that we revered as gods because of their abilities and powers in the past, and they split off into a lot of different groups and got into in-house fighting and land disputes and things like that, even used nuclear weapons on each other. It was quite a mess. And actually, one of them actually made an alignment with some of the Greys and Reptilians for control and total power. And we're dealing with that mess right now. But basically, we've got the benevolent Anunnaki now returning, coming in, you know, cleaning up their karmic stuff, you know, around this. There are also the other groups too, the Pleiadians, Andromedans, and Syrians, all these other groups, you know, are Arcturians, are all helping. There's an Orion Council of Light too, and they're all working to kind of clean up this regenerate mess, all the interference that was going on, to give us a shot again at you know, returning the planet back to Eden. You know, but there's just so much misinformation out there that, you know, like saying all Anunnaki are evil, you know, or they're pigeonholing every group and like everything comes from Orion is evil. Well, it's a big system. There's a lot of different groups there, and a lot of beings actually battled it out with some of the regenerate ETs, and were successful. And now they're coming here to help us out on Earth. So there's so many different stories, and I think it's really important that people drop down in their heart and develop their own inner sensitivity and use that spiritual discernment to see, you know, okay, how much of this is accurate, how much of this is true, and how much do I want to align myself with?
Yeah, that's good advice, James. Dropping down into the heart, trying to feel, trying to be aware of, where the truth is, because, as you said, there's so much disinformation out there, and, that's been one of the toughest things for me, in being involved in this field, is that there is just so many lies and so much distortion that exists out there. And when it comes to understanding, well, what are the real motivations of extraterrestrials? Frankly, we don't know fully, because we haven't met these people. We haven't met these beings yet. Even the Pleiadians, who are kind of like generally described in very positive terms as a friendly race here to uplift us, but we're kind of going off the experiences of others, and maybe you've had direct experiences, but ultimately it's like we need to be able to kind of like make all of this open and transparent, so that this is something that our whole society engages with, this information, so that we can work out, who are our friends, who are the ones that we don't really want to work with, and who are the ones that are trying to undermine us, and that way we can get a better idea of the full extent of different ET civilizations and what they have to offer, because different ET groups are visiting us, and they all have something to offer, but we have to be at a certain level to be able to fully appreciate what gifts they have or what lessons they have for us.
I think it all goes back to the basics. By their fruits you'll know them. And are they empowering you to make your own personal, connection with Creator, Spirit, Source, whatever name you want to give it? And are they assisting in the awakening and healing process? Are they going to help restore the environment? And are there strings, attached to that and things like that? And we need to start really using some, discernment and start living a life of impeccable integrity to get through these times. And I think that's what's happening. I know it's all going to come out in the end, who's who and the different agendas of each group. And we're in the process of all of this unfolding. But I know, thanks to a lot of the work that you've been doing and others, out there, all this information is finally surfacing, and people are having at least a chance to make up their own decisions.
Well, what you said there was critical, living that life of impeccable integrity. I mean, that's really the key here, because I think the more in integrity you are, the more likely you're going to draw into your environment, into your circumstances, people and beings that are going to help better unravel and better understand what is going on. And certainly, I try to practice that as best I can, in terms of, always putting out what I believe to be the truth, and not doing anything that I feel to be out of integrity, because I know that if as soon as I go down that path of not being in integrity, then my ability to discern and understand what's going around me is going to suffer. And I think this is the biggest problem for those that are in these positions of power, who are out of integrity, out of alignment, is that the beings they draw into their orbit are really kind of very dangerous, very Luciferian type beings. And of course, they're trying to make, like, I don't question, I don't doubt that there are people within the system who maybe do want to try to make the right choices, but because they do lack that integrity, they are operating in circumstances that are really very, very difficult, and whatever choices they make are always kind of false choices in a bad situation, surrounded by kind of beings who are more ruthless than you are. So in many ways, I think that the way our planet is going to move forward is by people being in that place of impeccable integrity. I like that phrase that you use, to be in that place, so that way we can make the right choices, and we're going to attract the right beings, or the people that are going to help us implement those choices, so that we make the planet a better place. And the people who are out of integrity, who are kind of surrounded in the quicksand of lies and malevolent beings, that ultimately we're going to have to help them get out of the mess.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a interesting situation going on. And what I've seen too is, like, my truth is flexible. I do my best to bring out the highest information possible and, the cleanest information and be very accurate on it. But I always tell people, if a lot more information comes in and some higher beings come in and give you more details, and sometimes we have to let go of our old programs and our old belief systems and realize, hey, maybe there's something a little different going on than I was told. And maybe a lot of things I was told did come from sources that weren't that impeccable. And so I think we always have to be in a space of reevaluating, you know, our belief system and being flexible. You know, we've hit the end of the hour, unfortunately. You know, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and shedding some light on all of this. It's an amazing interview. And I know we probably have to get you back on again because I know we just like touched the tip of the iceberg here.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, James. And if anyone wants to find out more about my research, they can just visit my website, exopolitics.org. I have all the information there on Kennedy's Last Stand and Galactic Diplomacy and my current research. So thank you for having me on the show and being a light for the world, James.
Oh, you too. And I'll probably be seeing you soon.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Well, this is James Gillen, your host, signing off. Have a great evening. Watch the skies and stay in your heart.